This is episode number 388 with number one New York Times best-selling author, Ryan Blair.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. We just had an incredible experience this last weekend. The Summit of Greatness went off and it was magical. So many amazing people from all over the world showed up, and one of our keynote speakers was Ryan Blair. And wow, did he rock the house. We had to bring him on again to talk about his new book. He's got a book called Rock Bottom to Rock Star, and I'm very excited for you guys to connect with him and learn about how he overcame so much adversity to building a multi-$100 million business and becoming a number one New York Times bestseller. He's done so many great things. And for those that don't know who he is a New York Times bestselling author, self-made multimillionaire, and serial entrepreneur who established his first company when he was 21 years old and has since created and actively invested in multiple startups. He has founded and sold numerous businesses for hundreds of millions of dollars, runs global healthy lifestyle company Visalus, and is a venture capitalist. He's also the author of the number one New York Times bestselling book, Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain, How I Went from Gang Member to Multimillionaire Entrepreneur. It was also made into an award-winning documentary, and he's appeared on CNBC, MSNBC, Bloomberg, CNN, Fox, every other news site you can think of. And again, his new book is called Rock Bottom to Rock Star, Lessons from the Business School of Hard Knocks. And some of the things we cover today are, what are the skills that make a great CEO in order to manage a team of 2 or 2,000? And Ryan talks about the skills of scaling as a CEO. Also, what's the biggest challenge about being a leader of a big organization today? Again, thousands of sales reps, thousands of employees, millions of people around the world buying your products. What's the challenge of being a leader in a big organization today? Why Ryan says that you should never, ever believe your own hype. Why women can be better leaders than men and what you need to learn about that. How to get out of a dark hole when you're experiencing emotional pain, and so much more. I love this one, guys. I hope you enjoy this as much as I do. Make sure to check out the full show notes and video interview at lewishowes.com/388. Ryan Blair is the man and is a good friend of mine. So make sure to share this out with your friends, tweet it, give Ryan some love, leave a comment on the blog or the YouTube channel, and let me know what you guys think. And without further ado, let me introduce to you the one, the only Ryan Blair.
We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card, you call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone if you only had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. Capella University's game-changing FlexPath format helps you learn at your own pace and fit earning a degree into your life. From before you enroll to after you graduate, you'll be supported by people who are invested in your success so you can pursue your goals, knowing that help is available if you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Okay, quick math. The less your business depends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite, and you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/greatness. netsuite.com/greatness. Again, head to netsuite.com/greatness.
Welcome back, everyone, to the School of Greatness podcast. We have the legend, Ryan Blair, in the house, man. Good to see you, bro. Love you too, man. Super pumped for this.
Yeah.
You had a book that came out a number of years ago called Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain, number one New York Times bestseller. Been a big hit. A lot of entrepreneurs have read this book over the years and said you've inspired them to launch businesses. You've got a new book out that's out right now called Rock Bottom to Rock Star. Make sure you guys go and pick this up right now. Everything this guy does is really inspiring, really powerful stuff. So make sure to go grab this right now.
And did you notice on the back?
Yes.
There's a couple names on the back.
The first name there. You're not going to be able to see this, but the back of it, you're going to have to go buy it so you can see it. The back of it has my testimonial on here.
Well, you inspired
me. My endorsement.
You inspired me, man. Like,
appreciate it.
When we, in our hikes and the first podcast we did and all the times we spent together on the cruise ship at Summit. I mean, you know, we've crossed paths a number of times for a number of
bonded many times.
Yeah, it's
for
cool.
For those that don't follow me on Snapchat or Instagram stories, me and Ryan go on like every month or two, we go on a hike.
Yeah.
And we learn a lot when we connect. I feel like you're one of my biggest mentors from how much you share and how much you open up and talk about, you know, your struggles, your opportunities. You have a company called Visalis. This is one of the products. It's a neon energy drink, but you sold this company originally for almost $800 million, correct?
I sold Visalis for, well, I mean, just to take a step back, I bought the company in 2005. So I've always been a bit of a venture capitalist. I got beat up by my venture capitalist pretty bad on the sale of Sky Pipeline when I was 24. I sold the company for round numbers for like $25 million. And, the venture capitalist got $24 million of it, so to speak. So then I started Visalis because I saw two great entrepreneurs and they had a great doctor and a scientist behind it. I invested in them and I sold the company in 2008. And in 2008, right, I sold it right before the recession hit. And I structured a deal where I had a 5-year earnout. In 2008, we were doing $500,000 a year in EBITDA, which is profit for those people who don't know. And, by the end of the earnout, I was doing $97 million in EBITDA per year.
Wow.
So the price tag on the end of the sale was $792.4 million.
Amazing. And then you sold it and then you bought it back.
Yeah. So I sold it. Sales dropped. You know, it wasn't the company that bought its fault, but, it wasn't the same. And you know, we had to grow up. Myself and my co-founders made a lot of cash and, you know, we were living a life like a rock star. And in my book, I talk about some of the mistakes I've made being a rock star. Like, you don't need to buy a jet if someone else has one.
Right. You bought a jet, huh?
Yeah, I bought a Challenger 300, which is a great jet. But unfortunately, one of my partners is in Miami. The other one lives somewhere in New York, and I live in L.A. And so when I wanted the jet, he had it. And so, you know, next time around, we'll just use a NetJets or something like that.
Gas money is expensive.
Yeah, it's 4,000.
Picking a friend up.
$4,700 a flight hour.
Wow.
That was my total cost on it. So
Crazy. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So what do you say is the one of the biggest mistakes you had, or lessons you learned, I should say, in that period of buying it and selling it?
Yeah. Well, you know, the momentum is an interesting thing. So when you start a company, you have this dream like that all of a sudden it starts, just sales start happening in your sleep. And you don't know when it's going to hit. And a lot of people call it a tipping point. Oh, I get the chills just thinking about this. Like, I remember when I was like, it's a tipping point. Like, it's happening.
Like, there's money coming in automatically.
Yeah, it was but no one else saw the grounds, like, underneath the, it's like a tidal wave, right? Like, I saw the inertia happening, but the water still looks the same. And then all of a sudden the tipping point hits and it just breaks your barriers and walls and crashes things. And
what was that like? What was happening or what was coming in during the tipping point?
Well, I'd read Malcolm Gladwell's book. We all have, a lot of us, right? I've always dreamed about it. And also I'm like, I'm having one. It's happening. and you know it before. So I, as a CEO, and I'm a data guy, you know, I started my career as a software engineer. So I'm looking at analytics and data. And so I'm seeing data that's like, this is momentum. And, the thing that I learned is, once you get momentum, it does all the work for you. And so, unfortunately, the biggest mistake that I made, it's like I equate it to, I love basketball. It's like once you once I realized I could jump really high and I could play really good, then I just started showing up. You know, I didn't practice much. I didn't prepare. Mm-hmm. I didn't discipline myself because momentum did all the work. I remember in July 2012, I sold out American Airlines Arena in Miami during the Heat in their first run to the championship. And I sold more tickets to that arena than the Heat sold to their, you know, championship series.
For an event theater?
For an event, yeah, wow. For an event. And it was my birthday, and I walked on stage, and the whole place broke out in a happy birthday song to me, right? I didn't have to do anything. I just showed up, right? Now that I bought the company back, I got to work, right? Like, I don't got momentum right now, so I got to start it all over again. And next time I get it, I'm going to make a lot smarter decisions.
Wow, man. Some fun facts about you is you identify yourself as socially awkward. Is that true?
Yeah. Who told you that?
Found it somewhere online.
Yeah. I'm a Cancer, and, you know, I don't know much about this, but there's half of me that's completely introverted, and there's another half of me that's completely extroverted.
Right, right.
And the duality between the two is a bit of a, you know, conflict. But if you were to invite me to a dinner party, as you have, I would ask you every detail about everything, like who's going to be there, what's the cuisine, what's the, you know, blah, 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 to convince myself to go. Now, I have been working on just going.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I know it's a good thing.
Sure.
But, yeah, I'm socially awkward.
What are the greatest skills that you have that make you a great CEO? This socially awkward skill obviously is working for you.
Yeah. Truth is, I don't think I'm a great CEO. I really don't. I know some great CEOs, and I've learned from some very great CEOs. My team around me makes me look on occasion like a great CEO. Mm-hmm. And I've figured out what my weaknesses are. And I've got a team that knows that and they know what my strengths are. And so they put me in the game where I'm strongest and I defer to them where I'm weak and they forgive me. Like on the bottom of my strength list is consistency and communication and empathy, right? You know, and so things that are pretty important when you have a company with a lot of people. And so they'll be like, Ryan, that doesn't sound very empathetic. And I'll be like, because I have empathy in me.
Yes.
But it just isn't one of my strengths, right? So then I go, okay, let me reset. Let me reset. And I'm not going to tell this person, you know.
To go screw off or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I have the ability to be a bit like what's his name? Bobby Axelrod in the movie, TV show Billions.
Okay.
And I try to check that. Like, I don't want those types of problems, right?
Sure. Yeah. That's good. So they forgive you a lot then, huh?
They forgive me. Every day I get forgiven for something from someone. And most importantly, I get forgiven for the man upstairs every day for not doing my best.
What do you forgive yourself for?
That's a good question.
Or what have you not forgiven yourself for?
That's even better. What have I not forgiven myself for? You know, I've let my ego get the best of me a lot. I'm still working on that, trying to understand it. And you know, I've let my competitive spirit get the best of me a lot where, like, you know, I'll out of this innate desire to compete, I'll compete with people I shouldn't. Or I'll compete. So I think that there's probably a few weaknesses that I'm still working through, or perhaps I was insecure and I shouldn't have been. I should have been more secure about that stuff. Like for example, if I'm doing too much of the talking at a dinner table, it's not because I want everybody to hear me talk. It's because I'm trying to seek approval or something like that. And so I'm trying to figure out that balance between, you know, between my success and people knowing it and people not knowing it. You know, because now I walk in a room and a lot of people know it, but I don't. My blind spot is I don't know that they know it, so I just want to share everything. And right. They're like, "Dude, I know all about you. Quit sharing it."
Yeah.
So it's weird. The other night I was with my friend Terrence Jenkins, and I was at his house, and had a bunch of these celebrities over, and I go meet somebody who's a famous rap star, and I'm like, "Oh, nice to meet you, blah blah." Yeah, I wrote a book. He's like, "I know exactly who you are, man. Quit talking. But you don't have to tell me.
Right.
Like, let's talk about art. Let's talk about other stuff." And I was like, "Huh? I guess people do know who I am." So it was a weird thing. And he knew who I was because of my friendship with Terrence.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. Why do you think, you know, I go through experiences like that as well, but why do you think we have that or we go through those experiences as human beings? Yeah. I'm sure people relate to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, where I came from, you know, I never dreamed in a million years that somebody had asked for my signature on a piece of paper and that mattered. But like, I'm a man of the people, right? So I don't see myself as some, you know, rich person or some wealthy person or famous person or whatever I am, or a New York Times bestselling author. Like, they did it all for me. It's them, not me. It's them buying my book and taking action on it that has put me in this position. And so I refuse to adopt the personality or the ego that this is me doing this. This is somebody else. And when it is me, I just give the credit to the man upstairs because he gave that to me, and I'm very spiritual on the subject. So
yeah,
that's how I keep my ego in check. It's like, I'm a vessel. Mm-hmm. That is all I am. I'm a messenger. So yeah.
Another, I don't know if this is a
I'm nervous. Lewis knows me better than a lot of people.
I do know really
well. So he probably, in preparation for this, made some telephone calls.
Exactly. Here's another, I don't know if it's fun fact, but it's another interesting moment is that your mom was on life support for 2 years after a major skull injury.
Yeah.
But then she had a recovery, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I write about that a lot. It was a very dark period for me. And what's interesting is during that was the darkest period of my life. And I learned a tactic called compartmentalization. Mm-hmm. And so
I don't have that.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to really not have the emotions from something bleed into other areas of my life.
And I've seen a lot of other entrepreneurs do it. And I've seen marriages, like, for example, if a marriage fails, I've seen the business fail too. And like, and that's the worst thing that could happen for your kids, right? Like the business has got to survive to pay the bills. Like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And you can't let, it's a tough thing to do. It's only good to do when you're at war with something. You know what I mean? It's not good to live in a compartmentalization mindset forever. It's a coping strategy psychologically. But you get into a point where it's almost like a zone where you're able to, you know, open up a compartment, do what you need to do, close a compartment, open up another one, do what you need to do, close it. And then you get intolerant of anybody wasting any of your time.
Yeah.
Right. And it comes to a point where you're like, look, my mom's on life support right now.
Yeah.
And you want to tell me you stubbed your toe.
Right.
Right. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you don't make a lot of friends in that moment. But I remember when my mom was in a coma, one time I blow off steam. I went out to a club and went to go have some drinks, and the waitress knew me, and she goes, have you been crying? And people didn't know what I was going through. And I was like, wow, man, like, yeah, I have been crying. I just saw my mom. I could cry right now talking about it.
Right.
Yeah. But that was a tough experience. And it's still tough now. It's funny, you know, she's in bad shape. I don't know how much time I have left with her, but I know that I get a little bit of time every day when she can be awake to take the call. I have to find the window because she's only got the ability to recall and remember for, say, an hour or two a day. So I have her nursed, you know, my family has to pay about $1,500 a day to keep her alive, but she's happy. Like, you know, she's happy. She watches a lot of Netflix.
Yeah.
She got to catch up on 2 years worth of movies and TV shows and everything she missed.
Sure.
Yeah. So, but she's severely handicapped. But it's weird, your perspective. Like, a lot of people would be like, pity me, my mom's severely handicapped. I'm like, I'm just happy my mom's alive, right? So it's weird how life can give you kind of different perspectives.
I mean, I've got a similar experience. My father was in a car accident 11 years ago. To next week, it'll be 11 years. And he's around. You can have a conversation with him, but he's not fully emotionally. He's not my mentor anymore, like the father that I knew for 22 years. And you know, it's a challenge as well, because when I call, he forgets a lot of things. He always asks the same questions.
Yeah,
so it's like,
hear that, man.
But in some ways, I feel like it's made me so much more driven to leave a bigger legacy and to support him how I can and to thank him by living a great life and doing my best. Do you feel like?
Yeah. So it's one of my philosophies is it's not what kills you, doesn't kill you, makes you stronger. Cause there's a lot of things that don't kill you that don't make you stronger.
Right.
But what weakens you can strengthen you. Right. So like that must feel like a weakening moment when you're on your phone with your father.
Yeah.
And you might, you know, I'm sure you probably hang up that call and have to do some reflection as I do when I'm with my mother. And then all of a sudden you get some strength from that weakness, like that feeling of, man, like I'm going to make him proud is probably what you say.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
He's not even aware of it.
Yeah.
He's not even aware really what I'm doing that much. I mean, he kind of gets it, but he's not really aware.
Yeah.
But I'm like, doesn't matter whether he's here or not here.
His spirit's getting it.
Yeah, he's getting it. He's getting it for sure.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're, you know, and what about your father?
Yeah.
Is your father in your life or?
Yeah, you know, that's a tough one. I've forgiven him 100%. He disappeared at 13. He was a very violent man to my mother. Mm. He's heavily affected by the Vietnam War, and he was a veteran. And he let that get the best of him. And that's why I have such an open heart toward veterans and military families, because I understand firsthand what that can do and how traumatic that is. Now, that's an excuse, in my opinion, right? He didn't seek the help that he should have sought. And there's help out there, and you got to seek it. And he didn't. And it destroyed his life. Now he lives. He recently started because I'll tell you a funny story. I was in Israel and I was playing basketball.
I saw your whole journey. Right? Yeah.
I'm playing basketball and I sever my patella tendon. For those of you who don't know what this
is, I'm not laughing, but I shouldn't be laughing, but it was funny.
Yeah.
This is funny because we couldn't hike for like 5 months because of it.
No, I'm finally walking again, working out again, hiking. I feel great now, but I couldn't walk.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I see on my Facebook feed, like somebody says, I'm really worried about you. Are you okay? And it's my dad. I hadn't heard from him in a long time. And I was like, huh, that's ironic. Like, I would have loved him to say, I'm worried about you at 14, at 15, at 16, right. at 17, at 18.
Sure, yeah. Now when you're in a gang, yeah, when you were at juvie.
When I went to juvie. Yeah, but my mom was in a coma. Right. Would have loved a little shout out then.
Right.
And I've forgiven him. And obviously, I appreciated that, you know, he's come to terms that he wants to be a father to me. And so I've yet to set the reunion. I plan to. But I'm a little bit, you know, I don't know exactly how to do it, yet, but we talked about it. He's willing to, I'm willing to, but I want to make sure I set the right environment. So that way I don't have anything to get off my chest with him because I put it all in my books. Yeah. He knows exactly how I feel because he's seen it on TV. He read about it in People magazine. I mean, you know, I feel a little bad that the guy gets beat up so much, but you know, he made some bad decisions and it made me a stronger man.
There you go.
And I'm going to take a stand right now for all those fathers out there that are taking action on behalf of their children, no matter what, right? Even if they're going through a tough divorce or that, you know, their counterpart, you know, it didn't work out or they have a lot of resistance or conflict or tension in the relationship. You know, it's real easy when that happens for a father to disengage from their son. And that's when you can't, that's when you got to double down engagement.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's gotta be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. Like when you're trying to buy tickets for the best seat at your favorite team's big game, or when you're hiring for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. With ZipRecruiter, you can find qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I believe finding the right team member is one of the most important steps in setting up my company for success. We like to ensure our new hires will be a good fit before they're even on the team. So I am grateful that I have ZipRecruiter's help when we want to grow the team fast. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
And why do fathers disengage in so much in that area?
I can't imagine, like, you know, I have a son, Reagan, 7 years old, and me and his mother didn't work out. And a lot of times we have conflict and it's not easy and we try not to get him involved, but like, there is no way, you know, I guess one of the things is I look at it and I say, I'm playing for that boy's opinion of me when he's 25 or 30, right? He's 7 now. I want him at 25 or 30 to know the dad that he had at seven, right? But he might not know it now, right? But
he may not appreciate it. He may not care.
He may be influenced to believe that, you know, certain things are not real or whatever the case is. And then also, inversely, and it's funny, I started reading him a bedtime story the other night, and I grabbed the book, The Monk That Sold His Ferrari. Uh-huh. You read it?
I haven't read it, but I've seen it.
Yeah. Well, I have a Ferrari, and my son started getting attached to it.
Oh.
And he's like, Dad, will you take me to school in the Ferrari? And at first, you know, I'm proud of myself. I want to do it. And then I heard him bragging that he had a Ferrari to his friends. And I had to let him know, no, you don't have a Ferrari. Right? I got a Ferrari.
You got squat.
Yeah. And, you know, I earned that, and it was a way for me to reward myself, right? Because I'd achieved something. And so I'm figuring out a way to detach him from materialism, even though I do have my own, you know, own love of toys and things like that.
But how do you do that as a father? I mean, you sold a company for almost $800 million. You're doing extremely well right now. You live at the top of Hollywood Hills. You have an amazing house, white beach sand up by your house with a nice pool, hot tub, cars.
Yeah. So one thing
instill those skills into someone?
Yeah. Well, one, I use a lesson plan. Like I'm a teacher. That's all I am. Yeah. That's why I love writing books, is I believe that I should be teaching in a school somewhere. And I can't wait for, you know, the president to call me and let's make that happen, because I have a lot to teach. I teach your entrepreneurship. I teach your Visalis. I teach every single day. So I love teaching him. So how do you do it? You try to, one of my friends, his name's Alex von Furstenberg. He, is the son of, Diane von Furstenberg and the stepson of Barry Diller. He's on the board of IAC. He told me, talk about the value of things, not the cost. Right. Not that, you know, not the price. Right. So talk about the value. Mm.
So give me an example.
For example, the Ferrari. Why is that valuable to me? Right. You know, not that, hey, this Ferrari is a $333,000 car, or whatever I paid for it. And it goes, you know, but it's like, what's the value of this? The engineering behind it, the value of it. Right. Not the price of it. And like, you know, like, for example, if I say, oh, that costs too much. No. That's not valuable for us. Why would I say, if he wants a toy, he always likes video games and stuff. He wants to buy an in-app purchase. And these in-app purchasing people,
it can be expensive now.
They know
$50 to $100 on them, right?
I caught him buying, like, it was hundreds of dollars worth of stuff.
Man.
And I'm like, what? That's too expensive. Like $60, right? Like, why would I do that?
For a game,
right? And he goes, you got $60. And the truth is I do. But I want to explain to him that's not valuable. Like, what else could we do with $60, right? Than a fleeting moment in a video game. And there's so much more you can do. I bought a place off the grid in northern Arizona so that way I could teach him how to conserve water, pick up trash, like teach him how, you know, to integrate with nature, not just, you know, not just live in this castle that I built. So
right. Yes.
Yeah.
It's nice. I love your space.
Thank you. I'm sniveling here because you made me start to tear up talking about my mom. Thank you for pivoting.
Thank
you for pivoting me to something I'm very happy to talk about, which is my son.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What do you think his biggest challenge is going to be growing up?
Well, you know, he has autism. So, you know, today he told me, he said, sometimes your friends don't show up. And I've taught him how to make friends a lot. He used to be very sad about the fact that kids would make fun of him. Because he's different, you know, he's got special needs, and in school he has what's called a BI, which is an adult assigned to him to help him cope and understand how to integrate, and you know, and
it's just hard when you're in school if you have anything that's not normal, right?
Yeah, the kids see that. Yeah. Like, why does Reagan have an adult with him in class? Now, we had an early intervention. His mother is a rock star mom. She's there for him. We got him an advocate. You know, we've done everything we can. My son is in the public school system. And the reason why I did that is because I wanted to be an advocate for other families to utilize the public school system resources. Because I could have put him in some, you know, very expensive private school and got, you know, and so forth. And obviously I have more means. And so I have an advantage for him. And I want to then, that's why my foundation gives to autistic related causes and so forth. Cause I want to help families without means.
Yeah.
But I don't know what his biggest challenge is going to be growing up. You know, his challenge is going to be if he wants to be president of the United States of America or the next Mark Zuckerberg, because I'm going to figure out a way for him to do whatever it is that he wants to do. So his challenge is going to
be making the decision.
Yeah. His challenge is
going to
be, that I'm going to help him take these weaknesses and turn them into strengths.
Sure.
And where he's going to apply those strengths in the place that he loves the most.
Right. I like that. What do you think? I think there's a lot of people today that want to be entrepreneurs and that want to be a CEO and they want to be a leader of something. They want to build something.
what's the biggest misconception about being a CEO or being a leader of a company with 50 to 100 to 1,000 people, whatever in that range? What's the biggest misconception? What's the most, the biggest challenge about being a CEO and a leader today?
Well, I'll tell you the biggest challenge I've had, and I still have it, is, you know, when you, for example, you're in a relationship with someone and they come home and they have their needs and their wants, and you have 1,000 people that have needs and wants.
Uh-huh.
And your lifestyle that you live and you know, that sand beach that you have is built by them, not you. Right. And so you need to find people in your family that understand that we are servants and we are here to serve them. And when the company calls, you know, we go help. We do whatever it takes.
There's no off hours. There's no.
Yeah. I mean, you got to try to find a way to recharge. But a lot of times people don't understand what it's like to lead a lot of people. And sometimes when you lead those people, you know, you come home and you're not there because you might have had to lay off a person today. You might have had to fire a friend. You might have had to, you know, you might have had to have a very uncomfortable conversation. I woke up to a lawsuit. I mean, there's things that hit you when you get big and when you run a big company that suck. I mean, day in, day out. So, you know, a lot of people think that it's glamorous, but there's a lot of, when I was at the White House and I was in the West Wing and I got to see the president's staff and I got to see the man work. And I was like, you know, you have no idea what
the
this
pressure
guy, like, and I'm going to criticize him. I mean, I may not like his policy on certain things, but this guy's working harder than me. And he's taking, you know, he's getting more gray hair and
he's getting hits by everyone.
Yeah. Everyone at all times. And in fact, one of the staff members told me we have a national security threat every single day that the president has to review. Matt, 365.
Oh, sure.
Right? And you imagine.
What do I have to take action on or not take action on? What's serious enough?
Yeah. Oh, I get the chills just saying it. And having seen that man's work environment, you know, and I named my son Reagan, so it tells you that my politics were Republican until the party became what it is today. Hopefully somebody fixes it. Maybe I'll have a role in politics in the future, but I got to tell you, man, I'm not happy with the party as it stands today. But that said, I saw the president work. And I would hate to have his job, right? That's not an easy job. And he's
not glamorous at all.
It looks like he's
doing moments of glamour, right?
It looks like he's doing the best he can, you know? And I say that as an observer. It looks like he's doing the best he can. So I'm doing the best I can. I don't always get it right, but I utilize the data that I have in front of me today and the values that I have, and I make the best decision. But sometimes I don't see all the data. Sometimes, you know, the two decisions I have, both of them suck. I just take the best of the worst.
Yeah. How do you, I guess, come home at night and cope with it, whatever's happening? I mean, again, the pressure, the money involved, the people's lives involved.
Yeah.
How does a leader, do you think a leader should handle these pressures? Like, what should we do as we continue to grow? And, you know, you talk about don't believe in your own hype. You know, can you integrate that in this as well?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's how you cope with it. Don't believe your own hype. One of my friends, he's a professional poker player.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's really good at it. And he's also a great businessman. And he's like, when you're on a run, you got to be prepared to start having some losing hands. And to use a baseball analogy, right? Like, if I show up to bat and I'm hitting 1,000. Right. It's real easy to be like, I'm the best baseball player in the history of humanity. But eventually your batting average is going to even out to, you know, 400, and that's fine. A lot of people don't understand that business is like, you know, you're going to have a batting average. Right. So one of the things that I tell people in my book is pay attention to your timeline. Right. So I started my career 20 years ago to in October, which is when my book comes out. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. This is my 20th anniversary as an entrepreneur. And if you look at it over 20 years, you know, it looks like a hockey stick. It looks great. But man, some of those years and some of those moments in between.
Dark.
It looks like it's dark. Right? You know, there's been times where, you know, I've had to spend a week reflecting and contemplating and trying to check my ego. And one of the only reason why I was able to get that big exit when the guys at Blythe that bought me tried to have me fired. I write a lot about that. The only reason why I have the money I have and the company that I have today is because I said, you know what? I'm just going to let these guys walk on me. I'm going to let them spit on me. I'm going to let them do this. And I'm just going to let them do it because I know in the long term, I'm going to win. And I told one of my friends, and he told me, his name's Cameron Forney, if you're out there, I told him when this was happening, I'm going to buy him from the inside out. They don't understand that I have a contract right now in my hands. I'm going to build so hardcore that one day it's going to turn around. I'm going to own that company.
Mm.
And that's what happened.
Right.
You know?
Wow.
So, now that said, you know, not everybody has that kind of structure. And I had some great advisors. I've had great attorneys, great team members, partnership with Todd Gergen and the Gergen family. I've been blessed to be at the right place at the right time. And when I see a mentor like you, you know, I do everything I can to add value and then get my investors returns. So I've gotten people, one of my friends loaned me $100,000, when Visalis needed money, and I gave him back $3.7 million in cash without a contract.
Right? He gave you $100,000.
I gave him $3.7 million wow. cash back. And he gave me $100,000. He said, I know you'll take care of me. We don't need to do a wow. deal. And I took the percentage of money that I earned with his $100,000 and I gave him $3.7 million.
Wish I was that guy.
Yeah, get you $100,000 on you?
I'll get you $100,000 right now.
Nowadays I have enough money that I don't need.
You don't need that. You need investors.
Yeah. And I know what I'm capable of. I can do a lot with $100,000.
Sure.
Exactly. Back then, I wasn't sure what I could do with it. Now that I know right. I could turn that into a lot, I don't, you know, I'm a little more,
sure.
I'm a little smarter with my investment deals.
Who do you think, this might be not a politically correct yeah. question, but men or women, who do you feel are better attributes in general to lead?
I think women are better leaders than men for sure. 100%.
Why?
A woman, I'm a science geek, so you're gonna have to forgive me here when it comes to, so one, I'm very spiritual, but I believe in evolution because I've studied, in fact, when I was in community college, I thought I was going to become an archaeologist. I love, studying sciences and all kinds of sciences. And if you look at how we're designed as a species, you know, men are designed to hunt and bring back that food to the village. Women are designed to lead that village, to take care of those kids, and children and so forth, take care of the elderly and make sure that they serve the village. And that's what a leader should be, is a person who serves the village. And some of us men, you know, we're designed to go hunt. And that might be that we're great at sales, or that might be that we're great at, you know, at being singular in our way. Now, you can unlearn that type of stuff because that's as much culturally as it is genetically. But there's an element of genetics that plays into it, I believe.
There's a wiring, right?
It's transferred. I mean, behaviors are learned and transferred. Genetics are transferred. You know, it's like, why would an animal be naturally afraid of a human if it's never seen a human? It's because somehow, you know, that information was transferred in the genes. Mm-hmm. So there's information transferred in the genes in our evolution that I think makes women better leaders than men.
Have you ever thought about having a CEO, a woman?
Of course. Of course. 100%. Some of my top executives in my company are women. In fact, my team is mostly women in terms of my inner circle.
Same here.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, I can be that, you know, I have a very emotional side to me. I'm a mama's mm-hmm. boy. I was raised by two women, but I also have a very dominant masculine side to me where I could be highly competitive and, mm-hmm. and perhaps my blind spot, you know, of not having empathy or not understanding, you know, some of the, mm-hmm. the dynamics that are at play. And so my best advisors are females.
Yeah. I want to shift a little bit and talk about masculinity.
Yeah.
Because you went through a phase in your life where you live the rock style lifestyle.
Yeah.
Right.
I still live it. I just live it a little more healthily.
A little gracefully, right?
Yeah.
But there were months or years where you were going out and partying and with
100%.
Girls you can't remember names probably and, you know, having sexcapades and experiences.
Not sexcapades.
Okay. Experiences that were.
Yeah. I mean, I've taken it to my values. I was raised spiritually.
Uh-huh.
I've taken it to the edge of my values.
Sure. You're on the line, right?
Yeah. I know where the other side is, and mm-hmm. I chose not to go there.
Sure. Why?
I know what you're thinking. I told them there's some questions that are off limits.
That's all right.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for honoring that.
Sure. I'm curious about, you know, I want to talk about masculinity and what your definition of masculinity is, how you were brought up thinking, what it meant to be a man. Yeah. And if it's evolved over time now that you're a father.
Yeah. So I was brought up, my dad was a terrible example of that subject. You know, he would make misogynistic jokes. And my mother, she went through a lot of hardship. She was beaten. My dad would use her as an example. Mm-hmm. If I was at the dinner table and my mom talked with her mouth open, he would smack her in the face.
No
in front
way.
Of, oh, I mean, hard. Like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, it would be like, the hardest slap in the face to have a lesson for me to see. You don't talk with food in your mouth, right? That's the guy that I dealt with. You know, and he'd make, you know, all kinds of jokes about, you know, woman should be in the kitchen and blah, 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 blah. And so, you know, he beat my mom up so much that I basically disavowed anything that he told me at all and hated every philosophy and everything that he gave me whatsoever. Although he did give me a couple things I give him credit for, which is he, you know, he had a level of work ethic and ambition at the time that, you know, that showed me a way. And he was a smart guy in terms of his intellectual smart, but then emotional intelligence was zero. So my definition of masculinity is probably vulnerability, right? Like I'm a completely opposite of most. Like I think the most powerful thing a man can do is hold back his tears because he feels so much pain and feels, you know, feels what's going on in the world, right? And he's holding that back because he needs to show strength, but he feels it, but he wants to be strong and he doesn't want, you know, like you heard me, you saw me holding back tears, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So my definition of a man is one that is vulnerable, but is strong, right? One that is empathetic and tries to understand the situation, but knows when to take command and make it happen if it's needed. One that defends his family, one that makes sure that his children are fed no matter what, right? One that makes, that's a leader of his family and you know, a person perhaps that has dedicated their life to service. Mm-hmm. You know, when I meet a serviceman or a police officer, my brother-in-law was a former chief of police. It's like, I thank them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I went to Colonel Ernie Banks at West Point's ceremony of retirement where they made him a general. That guy's a man. That guy has sacrificed his entire life, given service, been in combat. Like my definition of a man is a person of service, right? And a person who doesn't, you know, a lot of people just take from this society. And we live in such a beautiful society. It's easy to do that. My definition of a man is somebody who, whatever they take, they give back tenfold.
Yeah. Was there ever a period in your life where you felt like you weren't living up to that definition?
I mean, I think that the interesting thing about values as you grow is you change those values. You have a set of values that were given to you by someone else.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden you get intellectually smart enough to start asking, questions, are those really my values?
Yeah.
Right. Or, you know, the rules of our society are made up of people no smarter than you. At some point you realize that. And then you agree, hey, I agree with that rule or I agree with that value. And when you agree with it, then you'll check yourself and hold yourself to it, but you'll never be 100% there. Right. So the key is when you're not there, you go, I'm not living in my values right now. And you try to move back toward it. When you're there, you feel good, but you might have 10 different values. And so you got to constantly adjust them. Right. Because sometimes I might say, well, I have a value of family and spending time with my son. Right. That's part of my value system is quality time with my son is a value system of mine. But then all of a sudden I'm on the road for 5 days. Well, you know, I'm FaceTiming with him, but that's not quality time. Plus, you know, he's not really engaging unless you get him kind of in your arms kind of thing. So then I say, wait, I'm not living my values and I have to make these adjustments and shifts. And then the interesting thing is when you declare a new value, right? New value, like you declare a new value system. Like I'm going to, not get caught up in my own hype, right? Well, the day you declare that, you're caught up in your own hype. The reason why you declared it is because you're caught up in your own hype, right? But then you're doing it as a way to hold people public, for people to hold you accountable, especially if you post it on Facebook or you let your friends and family know. You're saying, hey, I want to be held accountable to this new value. And then you start to go through the slow process of knowing when you're not because you're aware and then trying to move toward it. But you can't just declare a value and expect to live it that second.
Yeah.
You declare a value or you adopt a value, or you realize that you haven't been living to one. And man, all the time I've had to check myself for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Generally when you're in these rock bottom moments, you know, it's because you're not living to some sort of value system that you should. And you don't realize it because it might be something that knocked you off that value system and you don't understand why.
You're not aware of it.
You're not aware. You don't know.
You're just frustrated. Why is my life sucking
digging
right now?
You just keep digging the hole, right? And you don't understand. The hole gets deeper and the hole gets deeper and the hole gets deeper.
Well, for someone who's not aware of it, how do they get out of it then?
Well, for one, if you're in a hole and you're feeling pain all the time and you're broke. And I mean, I've been there. I talk about it in my book. I went bankrupt. I've had all kinds of challenges. You got to basically realize I'm in a hole and I'm going to quit digging. Right. And so it's like, you know, and everybody talks about like hitting bottom. The title Rock Bottom was inspired by J.K. Rowling when she said rock bottom became the foundation for which I built my empire. Right. You know,
yeah,
and she tells us, she tells a story of which her sitting in a cafe. She's got a baby. You know, she can't afford, been denied by publishers and she's writing Harry Potter. right?
Crazy.
It's crazy. So it's like, so my goal with the book is for people at a rock bottom moment to know, like, this is it. This is the greatest moment of my life. This is, I can change right now. I just got to declare it to be that moment. Otherwise, it's going to happen. It's going to keep, you're going to keep digging and you're going to find that bottom somewhere. And my hope is, I have a sister that's on and off the American, on and off the most wanted list for the county we grew up in. She has never found the bottom yet, but she's gone. And I've tried my best to help her, but I know she's going there. And so I wrote this book because I want to stop people from digging, have them, you know, to each of us, my rock bottom moments might not nearly be as bad as someone else's. It doesn't matter. Pain is only, you know, the meaning you give it, right? I want to help people stop digging and start, you know, growing.
When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too, in person or on the phone with your local agent, or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app State Farm lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I don't know about you, but when around 3 p.m. hits, I find myself craving the right refreshment to get me through that mid-afternoon slump. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea is full-flavored sweet tea, but without the sugar and the calories. It might take several bottles for you to believe that a delicious sweet tea can really have zero sugar and zero calories. But you know what they say, life is full of surprises. Or in this case, full of flavor. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea. Try it to believe it. For 20% off your next 12-pack, head to Amazon and use promo code 20PureLeaf. That's promo code 20PureLeaf for 20% off.
For those that have a family member who might be in a similar situation as you, where it's just like, man, they just never figured it out. They keep making that same mistake. They keep being a victim or suffering or going through pain or challenge after challenge. It doesn't matter how hard you work to like be there for them. What advice would you give to someone?
You know, I wrote my book for that. And I'll tell you a story about Nothing to Lose, which is fascinating. And I get these emails from all around the world because the book still sells well. And it's all around the world. And I got an email the other day from a woman, and it's a touching story. And I plan to read it to camera later, but she'd just made the decision to commit suicide. She was a survivor of 9/11. She was in the, when the World Trade Center collapsed, she was a part of that. She lived and she had all this huge regret that everybody died, and she started doing drugs. And one night she's doing drugs and, has a bottle of pills and it's over, and she goes to do her last line before she says goodbye. And she sees underneath it is an orange cover and it's my book. And she picks it up and starts reading it. And so anyways, after she read the book, she made a decision that she was going to live. And, that's why I write these books, right? Because, you know, I know how hard it is when you're in a position like that. And so I guess, you know, I don't know the answer to the question of what do you do? Get him a book, put him in front of, find a YouTube inspiration, find out something that's going to resonate, put music in their ears that's going to help reprogram them. Cause these people are just, they've adopted bad programming. And they just got to get reprogrammed somehow, right?
It's challenging.
Yeah.
I've always found that like the people closest to us may never listen to us, but maybe they'll listen to someone else.
Yeah, that's it. No, yeah.
Give them a catalyst. Yeah. Give them the book. Yeah. Get a copy of the book for them or whatever, a podcast, like you said, or something that could be a potential.
Yeah. At my events, single mothers show up with their kids and they bring me they put that child in front of me. I'll give you a story. It's interesting. So Akon, the world famous singer.
Uh-huh.
So his mother is one of my team members at Visalis, and her son is Akon's son. And she came to me and said, my son loves your book. You know, we signed one to him. I'm like, of course. Like anytime I have that privilege to do it. And the other day, Akon came in the office and it was just a special moment to see a single mother bring her kid you know, that she wanted to show another reference to, because most of the time kids don't listen to mom. Right. Kids don't listen to dad.
Absolutely not.
I certainly didn't. So you got to get them in front of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, you know, when you do that, a magical spark might occur. And that's what happened to me, is my mom got me in front of a guy I would listen to. And as a result of that, I had a new model, a new example.
You had a mentor early on that really helped you, right?
Yeah. Well, at 17 years old, my mom put me in front of a guy that I'd finally listened to. I wouldn't listen to teachers. I wouldn't listen to police. Right. And all of a sudden I'm sitting in front of a guy and I'm like, I'll listen.
You respected him.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
I respected him. And he had the right style. Right. It's like,
you relate to him, right?
Yeah. He was disarming. Like, I was a thug. I was mean. I was a fighter. He was a flamboyant, laughing, big eared, short, bald guy that had all this love, you know, out of him and just wanted to help. And like, so I was like, huh, this is interesting. I'm going to listen to this guy. It wasn't some authoritative figure trying to tell me what to do and tell me that I'm about to ruin my life. And it wasn't my mom harping on me. And all of a sudden I listened to this guy and I became a student. And like the old proverb goes, when the student is ready, the teacher appears, right? And that's that. So you just got to put your students in front of as many teachers as you can until that student is ready and that teacher appears.
Well, you're a pretty big teacher right now to so many, even though you're still a student in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I'm learning.
But what would you say is the biggest conflict that you face on a daily basis, an internal conflict?
Yeah, internal conflict. Ugh. When I'm not with my son, you know, I wish that I could have found a way to have him in one, you know, have one household.
Mm.
And, you know, he'll, you know, yesterday he said something to me like, why can't we just all live in one house? And I got to explain to him these types of things, right?
And you know, his mom and him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, why do we need two houses? Is, you know, his logic.
Back and forth.
Yeah. Like, does it make sense? You know, and I bought him a really nice house because I wanted him to know that mom and dad are equally important. And, you know, one's not, you know, I wasn't married to her. And so I went out of my way to give as much as I possibly could to make sure that my son and his mother had a great environment and that, you know, and then he would obviously see my environment.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, that's the biggest conflict is like, you know, because a lot of people don't understand this. When you're a single father, you know, and I go, like, for example, if I take a day out of Los Angeles to go on the road, that's a day I don't see my son. If I only get him half the time and I'm taking one of my days, now I'm down to like a third of my time with him. And if I take five of my days, now I'm down to 10%. I get to see my son 10%. And so if you have a family together with a child, it doesn't make sense to you. Why wouldn't you go on the road for 5 days or 10 days? Because you get to see him the other 15 days or 20 days of the month. But if I go on the road for 10 days, I only get to see my son for another 5 days that month. So that means that month I saw my son for 5 days out of 30. That's not enough time to develop a young boy, right? He's 7 years old. He needs those lessons that I give day in and day out. So the biggest conflict that I have is I want to go on the road and see my people. I want to go help and lean in and work with their families. And then the other conflict is I can't take my son out of school because he's an autistic child. Like every minute counts right now for the future.
To develop.
His neural connections are wiring. His esteem is getting created based on the friends that he has. I pull him out from his friends and his teachers and the, you know, the IEP group that serves him and helps him. And that's damaging. So like, that's my conflict, right? You know? So, you know, every time I go on the road, if I do give a speech, like that's taking something really, really out of me. And I'll do that. I'll make that trade if I know I'm going to make an impact, like a real big impact, right? Because I know my son is going to see that example one day and say that was an impact. But when I do that, I won't do it if it's, you know, if there's no real impact associated.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, a lot of times, sometimes people, you know, they'll host an event or whatever and they'll ask me to come speak and I'll come speak at it. And I'm like, man, they didn't take as much time and put it into this event as they should have, because I took all this time away from my son to go there and you didn't figure out how to properly introduce me or properly say,
right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. No, it's the worst.
You've been there, right?
It's the worst, man. It's like someone who doesn't even know who you are has a note card. It's just like, okay, come on stage.
Yeah. And you're like, you know, I put all this work in preparation, time away from
flew
family,
here. Yeah, yeah.
Flew here and, you know, to give an impact.
Yes.
I love impacting people. And I love, sometimes I'll bring my son out on stage and I'm trying
to
teach him.
Yes.
He's gone out a couple of times. One time I was at an event and I was telling the story and he's backstage and he refuses to come out with me. And I'm fine with that. Like, I'm like, all right, you know, I'm going to go up there. And he's like, I want to come. And he's like, nope, not coming. Right. Stage fright. And I'm like, oh, no problem at all. I go out there. I'm talking. I start talking about my son. And all of a sudden, he runs out from the crowd, comes up on stage, and gives me a hug during the speech.
That's cool.
And then runs away. and I was like, I remember, it was one of those moments where I just stopped. And I teared up. And I was like, guys, give me a second here.
It's got to be the best feeling.
Yeah, well, it was a shocker. Like, it was a cool feeling. And a lot, there was, 10,000 people, that went into a standing O, and it was crazy, but it took me like 2 minutes to regroup to live that moment.
Sure. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's more challenging to sustain a loving, committed relationship as a leader of a big company or a CEO? And, you connect with a lot of CEOs who have big companies. You're in that space. What's the theme? Do people have the common challenge, or they have it figured out, or
Well, sometimes people are lucky in that they find their soulmate early, and so they're part of the process, and so they've been there since the beginning, and
they helped them build,
and they're that anchor windward for that CEO. Like, for example, my mentor Bob Gergen, the Wharton School of Entrepreneurship is called the Gergen School. His wife Pam, she's a brilliant intellectual. She held down the house while he was out there building the empire. They raised two great children, Todd Gergen, one of my very best friends, and Rob Gergen, Todd's brother, also a close ally and confidant of mine. And it's like they had that foundation where they did it together as a family, and they created a very, very successful family. And the two kids, Todd and Rob, have taken that on. So that scenario works really well. I didn't find that, early on. So, obviously now in dating, it's difficult to explain to somebody, hey, you can never be my first priority until, we figure out a whole lot of stuff together. First thing we got to figure out is, if you like the way I parent and if I like the way you potentially parent. Second thing we got to figure out is if you understand that I support not one family, but I support 1,000 families, and that, at Christmas time, those presents are either under the tree or not, based on the work that we're doing here right now, and you supporting me to go on the road, or you supporting me to do this, because those kids are getting fed on Hanukkah or Christmas or whatever the holidays are as a result of their employment with me. And if I make a bad decision, it hurts them.
And you got to have the clarity, the energy, the focus, the passion.
Yeah. I can't have somebody texting me during a board meeting saying, interrupting me, and I've had those situations where, it's like, it's a tough juggle. So last time I was on your podcast, I told you my biggest challenge was relationships. This time,
2 years later, it's the same thing.
You know what? It helps me write. So I write about this
stuff. That's good. Yeah. It's good to talk about,
Yeah. They say all art comes from some sort of, internal pain or internal frustration or internal desire, right?
What do you think it's going to take for you to resolve this, or to find a partner that is a great match?
Yeah, it's not to all the women that I've ever dated, it's not your fault. It is me that is the problem. I'm clear on that now.
Yeah, because you care more about the business, your vision, your son than a partner now. But although you're conflicted internally because you know what that brings, value, the fulfillment that brings, right? Yeah.
Well, no, I know I will be at my best. The book Think and Grow Rich has a chapter about sexual transmutation or something like that. So the energy that I have to put into dating takes away from my energy, to build.
So much energy.
Yeah, a lot of it. Right now I've in writing the book and everything else in my life, I've just said I'm not gonna pursue that right now because it's too important for me to educate my son. It's too important for me to, to build my business. And I'm in the middle of a turnaround at Visalis, right? So right now I got to go out there and I got to serve other people. I can't be focused on me. So it's been weird. I quit dating people. I quit even engaging, right? I've actually started having women become my friends now, which is really cool. And I'm not dating whatsoever. So, after the book's done and all the other work I got to do, who knows, maybe I'll get back on match.com or something like that.
I like it, man. Do you feel like having a partner will propel you into another level?
Yeah, 100%.
Really? The right partner, I should say?
Yeah, yeah. But it's tough to figure out, There's a
lot. It's not so black and white, huh?
Well, it isn't, because I'm a math guy, right? One of my philosophies of the path is all math. And if you just do the mathematics about, the population, the age, the requirements of emotional stability, intellectual stability, beauty, values, value system around subjects like money, around children, around this, that, and the other, you got to find something that mathematically is a relatively tough equation.
Because love is not enough sometimes, right?
You can't love somebody that that I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if you can love somebody that doesn't match your value system.
Mm.
You know, it's easy to fall in love and then
all you can love them, but it just doesn't work.
Yeah, I love
as efficiently as it could, right?
Yeah, I love everybody. That Will Ferrell movie, what's it called? The basketball one, where he plays a basketball player. I forget what it is.
But I know what you're talking about.
He had this thing. It was the phrase was ELE. Everybody love everybody.
Yeah.
I love everybody. But you know, to have a partnership is different than, you know, my family is a business. You know, everything I do is a business. You know, and so to have a partnership, it's got to run like a business. And my dream though is, I'll tell you this. My dream is this. I want to make enough money and find the right partner that helps me give it away. Mm-hmm. So I want to make so much money and then on the other side of the family that I have a partner that's helping make sure that we give it away with the same level of intentionality, with the same level of effect and the same level of focus and commitment. So if I make it, she gives it away and we come home over the dinner table and we talk about, you know, how I helped the foundation and what the foundation did today. And it's a team.
Yeah.
Like that's my dream. Mm-hmm. But you know, that requires, me to make a whole lot of money. And that requires, somebody to understand, you know, my philosophy and value system around it.
Yeah.
And that's, I have a unique one because, you know, a lot of people, I don't know, it's very unique just because having come from being absolutely poor to where I'm now, you know, my relationship is a little different. A lot of people have a hard time understanding, you know, like I bought a woman a first class ticket with me to Bali and she didn't appreciate it. And I was like, do you know, my mother never had more than $600 in the bank.
Yeah, you gotta appreciate it.
And here I'm spending $50,000 getting you, you know, to Bali and you don't appreciate it. Like I can't, I don't understand it. So anyway, so it's tough. And then, anyway, that could go on forever. Like
What do you say to someone who says, well, you know, you look at a relationship as a business, like a marriage or a partnership or whatever, as a business, maybe they think that doesn't sound so, I don't know, loving or, I don't know, the right thing. What do you say to someone like that?
It's definitely not The Notebook. when I write my romance novel, it's definitely not going to look like The Notebook.
Sure. What do you say to someone, though, who's like, oh, that's not the way you should think about relationships as a business?
I know. I listen to people, and believe me, when you're on social media, you get lots of advice on the subject. and frankly, as of right now, it has served me well. I would tell you, I am fulfilled. I have an element that I'd like to add to my fulfillment, and I think I'll be even more fulfilled. But I'm happy, right? You know, like I'm happy. Today, I woke up. I went on a hike with one of my dear friends. You know, I got a great workout in. I got a swim in with my son. I got him off to school. I had a fantastic meal. I'm sitting here talking to you. I'm helping people change, you know, their lives. I mean, I have a great life, right? And I'm able to feel very fulfilled. I know that I'll have an amplification effect, but I'm not searching for it. Sure. You know, I just know that I have to become the person that I need to become, and I need to be exposed to the person that is the right person for who I become.
Yeah, yeah. I like it, man.
Yes, did that work?
I'm going to take a sip of that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to take a sip to that.
This commercial is brought to you by Neon Energy Drink.
I like this stuff. Okay, final few questions.
All right.
I always feel like I could go like 2-3 hours.
Yeah, man.
Because we have these conversations off camera all the time, and I just feel like we never get to resolve anything. Like it's constantly like learning and sharing.
Well, have you back on.
I know. Well, you got to write a book before 6 years.
Yeah. So yeah. You know what? I did just before we go, I realized I'm alive again. I had no idea when I put the pen down on Nothing to Lose that my art, the way I express myself, the way I resolve conflict, the way I kind of rationalize, you know, and then understand perhaps bad decisions, that's through writing. So I'm committed to continuing the writing process this time around. I don't know how long it's going to take for the next one to come out, but I could tell you this. I'm an author. I'm a writer. And this is my art.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've done great stuff and everyone needs to get the book.
Thank you.
Final few questions. What are you most grateful for in your life recently?
My son the other day told me, my friend Rich Paula is at my house. I'm giving my son a lesson. He grabs the camera and takes a picture puts it on camera. I have no idea. And my son's sitting on top of my kitchen counter and I'm sitting there at the computer and he's showing me something on the computer and it's scary images from Five Nights at Freddy's, which is like these really scary things. And I'm like, wow, this is scary. And he goes, you told me to face my fears. And so I'm facing my fears. And it was the cutest thing in the world. And I was like, wow, like if all he learns is face your fears.
Yeah.
Right. So I was like, I'm grateful to Rich for capturing it. I'm grateful to Reagan for actually hearing the words that I said and applying them. And that's on the family level. On the business level, you know, Gerard Adams started Elite Daily after my book.
Like
he gave me a testimony that he read the book, started Elite Daily. I invest in the company, and like he's a lifelong friend. And so I'm grateful, you know, that people like him reach out to me, you know, with their business plans and put me in a position where, you know, I can be like their Sean Parker to Mark Zuckerberg, right? Like, you know, that's who I want to be as a venture capitalist. Is I want to find the next Gerard out there that the other VCs won't see or don't understand, because, you know, I'm a guy's guy and a man of the people, so to speak. And I'm happy to tell them what I would do if I were them. And so I'm just grateful to the inbound, you know, people that
opportunities
invite
you get,
me to look at their companies and seek my advice so that I can help them, you know, do the same thing I would want, which is I give them the same advice I would ask for.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. This is called The Three Truths. I don't know if I asked you this last time, did I?
I don't remember.
I don't think I did. It's called The Three Truths. I ask everyone at the end this question. Let's say it's the final day for you many years from now. All your books have been erased from time.
All right.
So all the lessons you've shared are gone for whatever reason.
Okay.
And you get to write down three things you know to be true about all your experiences in life that you would pass on to your family and the rest of the world. And these will be the only three things that they read about you as your beliefs, truths, values.
Got it.
Yes.
One, learn the rules so you can break them like an artist. That's Picasso. Learn the rules so you can break them like an artist. That's one. Number two, family first. Right now, my business is a family, so I integrate that in the same thing. Right, because since I didn't have family, I see you as family. Like
yes.
You're my brother. I've got probably Reagan calls so many people Uncle Lewis when we were with him the other day. There's Uncle Lewis. All right, we are one big family. I believe we're all interconnected as human beings, and you know, and so family first. But your family isn't just your blood, right? And then number three, I would say. You know, I would say number three, I'd say leave the world better than you found it.
Those are powerful.
Yeah.
I like those. Simple, man.
Yeah.
You didn't need to write the book.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That's it.
A lot more lessons in there.
I hadn't thought. Yeah, there is. No, this is all filled with lessons. The last book was about, you know, how I did it. This book is about how they can do it too, so to speak. So,
yeah. Before I ask the final question, make sure you guys get the book Rock Bottom to Rockstar by Ryan Blair. This is going to be a huge hit. It's a great read. Make sure to check it out. Some powerful lessons. Buy it and send a tweet right now about the interview, what you liked the most from this interview.
Thank you.
It's at Ryan Blair on Twitter.
Yeah, on Twitter, I'm at Ryan Blair. On Facebook, it's at Ryan Blair .fans. On Instagram, it's at Ryan Vaisalas.
At Ryan Vaisalas. Yeah. We'll have it all linked up here in the show notes afterwards too. Before I ask the final question, I want to acknowledge you for a moment, Ryan, for your incredible heart.
Thank you.
You've got such a big heart, man. You care so much about your team.
Yeah.
You care so much about your family. I've seen it firsthand many times.
Thank you.
You care so much about your friends. You know, the amount of love you've given me has been amazing over the years, and just the friendship we have. I want to acknowledge
you as well, man. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to acknowledge you for writing another big hit, man. This is a
yeah,
great job.
You know, but I need people's help, man. This is, you know, this is it. I can't do it without people. I want to get this story out, and I want to change a lot of lives. And that's it. I don't do this, you know, for profit. I do this to try to change as many lives. God has given me adversity for some reason. And I believe that reason is to share with people how I got through it. In the mistakes that I made going through it, what I learned, and then to help people through their adversity too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you've done a great job, man. I acknowledge you.
I'm just starting.
We both
Thank
are.
You.
Final question.
Yeah.
Is what's your definition of greatness?
What's my definition of greatness? Anybody who goes above and beyond the call of duty, right? Consistently to show up for their kids, to be the best teacher they can be, to live life like an art and like a science, right? And it doesn't matter whether you're rich or you're famous or you're this or you're that. If you're doing the very, very best, you, in my opinion, are great. And that could be the best valet, and he loves his job and he's fulfilled doing it and he does it good. Like, I see that person as great. You know, and so my definition of greatness is a person that's just operating at a level that is beyond what everybody else could even imagine, because they really take personal pride in what they do.
Ryan Blair,
thank you, brother.
Man.
I appreciate it. I love you, man.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Love you too.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes. Let me know what you guys thought of that. For me, I love connecting with Ryan. I love to be able to just hang out with him whenever I can, go on hikes with him, and just learn. He's got so much information. He's created so much. and he's such a giving human being. I really appreciate all that he does for so many people. If you enjoyed this, make sure to go to lewishouse.com/388. Share it with your friends. Post this on Twitter, on Facebook. If this is your first time here, guys, we get over 1.3 million downloads a month for this podcast because of you, because of the movement of individuals around the world looking to take their life to the next level, looking to turn their challenges into their dreams and figure out how to turn the impossible into possible. We are bringing you inspiration, knowledge, skills, tools, resources, and stories that are going to help you unlock what's inside of you in making that dream come true. It's because of you we're able to bring on incredible guests. You know, we just had on Meatloaf, the previous guest, and had an incredible interview. The next interview coming up, we've got UFC world champion TJ Dillashaw. We're bringing on incredible people to reveal how they've done it. Continue to spread the message of greatness. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Share it with your friends. Leave a review. Do whatever you can to get this message out there. When you spread the message of inspiration, you're supporting and being in service of those around you. This is the time to do it. Make sure to pick up a copy of Ryan's new book as well, Rock Bottom to Rock Star. This guy is a legend and he's doing some incredible things. So make sure to give him some love and send him a message on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook as well, and let him know what you think. I'm so pumped for what's to come. And I'm so excited that you're here on this journey with me. So thank you very much from the bottom of my heart. I'm so grateful for you for listening today. And continue to keep coming back, because I'm going to give you my best if you promise to keep coming back. So with that, you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
At Metro, get an iPhone 12 with 5G and a dual camera system for $99.99. Take amazing pictures and share them instantly. And don't put up with life's yada yada.
Yada yada.
Like photo bombers. Zoom, crop out,
yada yada,
and bye.
You don't take yada yada in life, don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Get iPhone 12 with 5G with no activation fees and nada yada yada. Only at Metro by T-Mobile. Switch to Metro, bring your ID. This offer isn't available for customers currently at T-Mobile or that have been with Metro in the past 180 days.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I've learned the hard way that constantly holding on to your emotions and repeatedly choosing to not talk about your feelings will only make you feel worse and worse. And up until about 10 or 11 years ago, I was afraid to talk about my trauma that I experienced. And I know we all carry around different stressors, big and small. And when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. But therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to fit your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Lewis today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/L-E-W-I-S.